This is Audible.
Gildan Media presents Your Coach in a Box, affordable, life-changing audio programs.
The Energy Bus, 10 Rules to Fuel Your Life, Work, and Team with Positive Energy by John Gordon. Introduction. Positive energy. It's a term being talked about a lot more frequently in conference rooms, classrooms, locker rooms, and even living rooms. Perhaps it's because there's an abundance of new research that shows that positive people, positive communication, positive interactions, and positive work and team cultures produce positive results. Or perhaps at a deeper level, we all know that every person, every career, every company, every organization, every family, and every team will have to overcome negativity, adversity, and challenges to define themselves and create success. No one goes through life untested. And the answer to these tests is positive energy. Not the rah-rah cheering kind of positive energy, although there certainly is a time and place for that as well. But rather, when I talk about positive energy, I'm referring to the optimism, trust, enthusiasm, love, purpose, joy, passion, and spirit to live, work, and perform at a higher level, to build and lead successful teams, to overcome adversity in life and at work, to share contagious energy with employees, colleagues, and customers, to bring out the best in others and in yourself, and to overcome all the negative people, whom I call energy vampires, and negative situations that threaten to sabotage your health, family, team, and success. Positive energy is very real, and in my work with thousands of leaders, salespeople, teams, coaches, organizations, teachers, athletes, moms, dads, and even children, I have witnessed the amazing power of positive energy. I've seen principals turn their schools around and enhance morale. Leaders have told me how they have used my strategies to help their employees and teams become more successful. Cancer survivors have told me how they won with a positive attitude. Athletes have shared how they've overcome adversity to reach their goal. Hardworking employees have emailed me and told me countless stories of promotions and accomplishments at work. And one mom even called to tell me a story about her son Joshua, who after hearing that his mom and dad were getting a divorce, said he was going to try to be strong and positive through it all because positive people live longer, happier, and healthier lives. It turns out Joshua remembered what I said to him a year earlier when I spoke at his school about the importance of positive energy. Not only was I touched, but I was deeply inspired. People like Joshua inspire me to write about and share positive energy because deep down, I know it matters and I know it works. My hope is that you will use this book to cultivate positive energy in your own life and career and then share it with your colleagues, your customers, organization, team, friends, and family. I'm confident that when you apply the principles in this book, you'll find greater happiness, enhanced success, higher performance, inspired teamwork, and significant results. While this fable takes place in a business setting, please know that this book was written for everyone. We're all part of a team, and every member of our team, whether it's a work team, sports team, family team, church team, or school team, can benefit from the 10 simple, powerful rules shared in this book. After all, positive people and positive teams produce positive results, and the essential ingredient is positive energy. Chapter 1, Flat Tire. It was Monday, and Mondays were never good for George. He stood in his driveway looking at his car and shaking his head. He wasn't surprised, really. Misfortune had been following him for the past few years, like a dark rain cloud hovering over his life. And today was no different. His tire was completely flat, and George's face was about to burst. "Not today," he shouted as he opened the trunk only to find a flat spare tire. He heard his wife's words in his head. "You should get that fixed, George. One day you're going to have a flat and wish you had a spare tire." "Why does she always have to be right?" he wondered. George thought of his neighbor Dave, and he ran down the block to see if he had already left for work. Dave worked downtown too, and George was hoping to catch a quick ride with him. George had an important meeting with his team at work, and today he couldn't afford to be late. Not today. Especially not today. George punched the air with his clenched fist, and when he saw that Dave's car was gone, of course he thought, why would he still be here? That would be too easy. A sweat poured from his brow. He ran back home, then stood in his driveway and looked at his cell phone, trying to think of someone at work he could call. Think. Then it dawned on him. He couldn't think of one person at work he could call who would come pick him up. His only option left was his wife, and she was the last person he wanted to ask. George walked in the house and heard the usual noise and chaos coming from the kitchen. He could hear the puppy jumping around and his wife trying to get the kids to sit still and eat their breakfast before heading off to school. He peered through the kitchen archway. As soon as the children saw him, the cheers erupted. "Hi, Daddy," they yelled. His daughter came up to him and wrapped her arms around his hip. "I love you, Daddy," she said as George barely acknowledged her. His son shouted, "Dad, can we play basketball right now?" George was like a reluctant celebrity in his own home. They wanted a piece of him, but he just wanted to hide in silence. "No," George shouted back. "It's not a weekend. I have to get to work. Now, both of you, just please be quiet so I can ask your mother something." "Honey, I have a flat tire and I have a really important meeting I have to get to today, and I need your car," he said frantically. "What about the spare?" she asked. "Of course you would bring that up. I never got it fixed." "Well, I can't help you, George. I have to take the kids to school, then I have a dentist appointment, then I have to get the puppy to the vet, then I have a parent-teacher meeting. Should I continue?" "You're not the only one who has things to do. You act like you're the only important one in this family. But I run this house and this family, and if I don't have a car today, I can't do my job." She had become good at mounting a good offense to preempt George's attacks. "Yes, but if I'm late to this meeting, then I may not have a job," he said. As George and his wife continued bantering back and forth, their 5-month-old puppy decided to say hello to George by jumping and slobbering all over him until he grabbed her by the collar and took her into the kennel. "Why did we get that dog anyway?" he asked. "Do we really need to deal with a dog right now with all we have going on?" "That's real nice," his wife said as their daughter started to cry, saying, "Daddy doesn't love Sammy." "I can't deal with this right now," George said. "You can't seem to deal with anything anytime," his wife countered. "Can you just drop me off after taking the kids to school?" he asked. "I'll still probably make it in time for the meeting." "I don't have time, George. Didn't you hear all I have to do today? I'll hit serious traffic on the way back, and then my day is gone." "Why don't you just take the bus?" she said. "It's only about a mile to the bus stop." "The bus? Are you kidding me? The bus? I haven't ridden on a bus since who knows when." "Who takes the bus?" George asked, very frustrated. "Well, today," his wife answered bluntly, "you do. That's who." "Fine," George said, as he grabbed his bag, stormed out of the house, and began his mile trek to the bus stop. Bus number 11 stopped in front of George, who was huffing and puffing and swearing under his breath. What a surprise, George thought. I actually made the bus. With my luck, I figured I'd miss it. As George stepped on the bus, he made eye contact with the driver, who had the two brightest eyes and the biggest smile he had ever seen. "Good day to you today, sugar," she cheered. George just grumbled and took a seat. What's so good about it, he thought. But her eyes never left him as she watched him walk to his seat through his rearview mirror. George could feel her eyes on him. Why is she looking at me? I paid the fare, he thought. He could see her big, never-ending smile in the rearview mirror and wondered, does this woman ever stop smiling? Doesn't she know it's Monday? Who smiles on Monday? "Where you going?" she asked. George pointed to himself. "Me?" "Yeah, you, sugar. I haven't seen you on my bus before, and I know everyone on this route." "To work at the NRG company," he answered. "That building downtown with the big light bulb on it?" she asked excitedly. "Yes, we make light bulbs," answered George, who wished he had time to get a paper so he could bury his head in it. "So what do we owe the pleasure of having you on my bus today?" she asked. "Flat tire," he said. "I hate taking the bus, but I have a meeting I have to get to with my team, and I had no other choice." "Well, you just sit back, relax, and don't worry about a thing. You may not like taking the bus, but I gotta tell you, this is no ordinary bus. This is my bus, and you're gonna enjoy the ride. My name is Joy. What's yours?" George mumbled his name, hoping she would just leave him alone. His words were short, and so was his fuse. Even on his best days, George was not a man who enjoyed chit-chatting, and he certainly didn't feel like talking to a bus driver who seemed like she had drunk one too many cups of coffee, and of all names, hers had to be Joy. Figures, he thought. Joy was something that had certainly been lacking in his life. He couldn't remember the last time he was happy. I bet she has no worries, he thought. All she has to do is drive a bus each day and smile and be nice to strangers. Sure, she could be all cheery and smile at me, but she knows nothing about me. She doesn't know the stress I deal with each day. She doesn't know the responsibilities I face at work and at home. Wife, boss, kids, employees, deadlines, mortgage, car payment, and a mom who is sick with cancer. She doesn't know how drained I feel. But she did know. Every day they walked on and off her bus, and she could spot them immediately. They came in all shapes, ages, colors, and sizes. Men, women, white, black, Chinese, white collar, and blue collar. Yet all had a similar energy about them. She could see it and feel it immediately. Lifeless. No kick in their step. Like a light had been turned off inside them. She could tell the people who shone brightly and those who had a subtle dim. She called them dimmers. They walked around like zombies, just trying to get through the day. No purpose, no spirit, no energy, as if it had been sucked out of them by the daily grind of life. She could tell the men who had given up their dreams. She knew the women who were working by day and taking care of a family by night. And she heard the complaints all the time. Too many people were overstressed, overworked, and overtired. That's why she made it her mission to be an energy ambassador and to try to energize everyone who came on her bus. That's why she called her ride the Energy Bus. And if anyone could use an energy boost, it was George. You know you came on my bus for a reason, George, she said firmly to him. Everyone does. George snapped back. No, I came on your bus because I had a flat tire. You can choose to look at it that way, George, or you can see the big picture here. Everything happens for a reason. Don't forget that. Every person we meet, every event in our life, every flat tire happens for a reason. You can choose to ignore it or ask what that reason is and try to learn from it. Every problem has a gift for you in its hands. As my man Richard Bach says, you can choose to see the curse or the gift. And this one choice will determine if your life is a success story or one big soap opera. And while I love soap operas, George, I don't like seeing real life people like you living them. And George, I gotta tell you, from the look of you, you're not making the right choice. So choose wisely, George. Choose wisely. At that, the bus stopped and George got off as fast as he could, feeling more like he had been hit by a bus rather than riding on one. Choose wisely, soap opera, stuck in his head. Whatever, he thought, and shrugged it off. His team was waiting for him, and he hated being late. Joy didn't always like hitting her passengers straight between the eyes with the truth. But with the stubborn ones like George, she knew there was no other way. It was the stubborn ones who often had the most potential. She knew because many years ago, she had been just like him. Down, out, tired, and negative. People had offered help, but she never accepted it. She had been angry at the world and hadn't thought she deserved it. It was ironic how people who needed help the most were often the most closed off to receiving it. She had had a big coat of armor, just like George did now. So sometimes, the blunt truth was the only way through it. Joy figured she would never see George again, but hoped that at least her piercing words would do some good. Chapter 2. Good News and Bad News. That evening, George sat in the car repair shop waiting for his tire to be replaced. It was taking much longer than it should, and as usual, George was growing anxious and impatient. He didn't like waiting. Waiting in lines for the movies, waiting in traffic, or waiting in line at the grocery store. He always picked the wrong line, and of course the person in front of him always had a product without a price tag, so a manager needed to be called and the product had to be found, and well, you know. George felt as if the world conspired to inconvenience him. How long could it take to replace a tire, he wondered. At last, the mechanic walked briskly into the room. Sir, I've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is that your car isn't destroyed and you're still here. What are you talking about? George shouted. It's only a flat tire. Well, that's more good news, sir. The flat tire prevented you from driving the car. While replacing the tire, I remembered seeing a notice from the manufacturer about your make and model, so I had a hunch to do a check on the brakes, and sure enough, they were completely worn down. At any moment, they could have gone, and you would have had no way of stopping. If you had hit a wall or something, you'd be as flat as your tire. You're lucky to be here, sir. It's been a common problem with your year, make, and model, and you should have received notification of a recall. George remembered seeing some letter from his car manufacturer, but had just thought it was another sale mail trying to take his money, and so he had thrown it away. The bad news, the mechanic continued, is that the part takes about 2 weeks to get here from the manufacturer. So we'll need to keep the car here, and once the part comes in, we'll be able to have it ready that day. Just great, George thought, not even realizing the good news he had just heard. The only things he was thinking about were having his car in the shop for 2 weeks and getting home. Just one more inconvenience for an inconvenient life. Chapter 3, The Long Walk Home. Instead of calling his wife to come get him, George decided to walk home the 2 or so miles from the repair shop. He walked more today than he had in several years. But at this point, he didn't feel like talking to anyone, especially his wife. Car in the repair shop for 2 weeks, he thought. What else can go wrong? He was near his breaking point. Just last night, his wife had told him that she was unhappy in their marriage, and George's negativity was making the entire family miserable. She had given him an ultimatum: change or it was over. It wasn't the first of their marital problems, and certainly it wasn't the first time she had told George he was negative. But now it was real, and he didn't want to lose the woman he loved. He knew she loved him too, but as she had said, no matter how much she loved him, she wouldn't live with someone who made her life so miserable. He vowed to change, but for the first time in his life, he was at a loss. He felt like his life was spinning out of control, and he couldn't do anything to stop it. He had always been able to fix every problem and rise to every occasion to meet any challenge, especially in his marriage. Yet now he felt truly powerless, as if his life was being lived by someone else while he watched it unravel. That night he had yelled to the heavens, asking for help, and had woken up with a flat tire. Some help, he thought. Just one more problem I don't need right now. George walked briskly, hoping to get home in time to read the kids a book. It was one of the few things he enjoyed doing, and it was something they loved as well. Whenever he was working in his home office, they would always come in and say it was time for him to read a book, which he always did. His two kids were his driving force. He loved his family, and he wanted to be able to provide for them and give them everything he had never had. They had a beautiful home, the school district was one of the best in the state, and the children thrived. He and his wife drove new cars and did their best to keep up with the Joneses, the Smiths, and whoever else they were supposed to keep up with. Yet with his family also came great pressure and responsibility. Work hadn't been going so well, and his last review was very troubling. His team was in disarray. Their productivity was in the toilet, and George had been told that if he didn't get it together, he would be replaced. For the first time in his life, his job was in serious jeopardy. So as George walked, he thought of his family, his wife's ultimatum, and his job. He was in danger of losing it all, and the car problem was the final straw. Something good has to be coming my way, he thought. It can't continue like this, or else I'm done. My life wasn't always like this, he shouted to the stars. I was a young go-getter once. Everyone talked about my great potential. I was a rising star in my company. My future was bright. I squeezed the juice out of life. Now, I can't even get my hands on a piece of fruit. I can't take this anymore, he yelled. Please help me, he shouted as he looked up to the moonlit sky. The air was silent, and George heard nothing except the sound of his own breath. He was waiting for something, a word, a sound, a bolt of lightning. He wasn't sure what, but something. Chapter 4, George Wakes Up. George woke up the next morning feeling tired, anxious, and stressed as usual. Every day he wondered what else was going to go wrong, but at least today he knew he wouldn't have car problems. Do you want me to drive you today? His wife asked. I do have time. Nah, it's okay, he answered. I'll take the bus. It's not that bad, except for the driver. What's wrong with the driver? She asked. Long story. I'll tell you later, he said, as he put on his sneakers for his trek to the bus stop. Then his mood turned even more sour as he thought about seeing the bus driver who had insulted him. Choose wisely, soap opera, stuck in his head. Who did she think she was talking to? He shook his head and then turned his attention towards his sneakers because it became painfully obvious that he wasn't able to untie his shoes. The laces were tied in 20 different knots, and he knew full well that his kids had been playing in his closet again. He threw his shoes against the wall, breathed a big huff, and just sat in painful silence. More silence. A minute later, he looked in the mirror above his dresser and saw himself as he heard a voice from his own conscience saying, "You, the bus driver was talking to you. You're the one with the failing marriage. You're the one who is about to get fired, who now doesn't even have a car to drive to work and can't even put on your own shoes. You're the one living a soap opera." The realization hit him unexpectedly. He couldn't disagree with Joy. She was right. His life and career had hit rock bottom. Even his boss and biggest supporter and mentor had sat in his office yesterday and told him he couldn't vouch for him anymore. "I can't carry you anymore," his boss said. "I don't want to be carried," George replied. "But that's what I've been doing. Everyone's asking me, what happened to George? And I'm saying, I don't know, but he'll get it together." Well, now they're looking at me saying, "He better get it together or else you'll both be gone. I love you, George, like a son, but I can't let you bring me down too. I've worked too hard for this. I have kids in college." "I will get it together," George declared. "We'll see," said his boss. "As my old football coach used to say, we don't talk this game, we play it. So I hope to see some action soon, because if you don't get it together, then we both know what has to happen." Fired was a word George never thought he would hear, and now he was hearing it all too frequently in the same sentence with his name. "I need to try to turn this around today," he thought. "How? I have no idea." Chapter 5, No Joy on the Bus. George finally got his shoes on, and as he walked to the bus stop, Joy the bus driver and her smile popped into his head. "Maybe she's not all that bad, after all. She pegged you, George," he thought to himself. "But do I really need another person telling me how much my life stinks? I mean, not only do I have to hear it from my boss and my wife, but now I even have a bus driver and total stranger on me. Who would be next to tell me what a loser I am? The mailman?" He made it to the bus stop in plenty of time and waited for bus number 11 to pull up, expecting to see Joy at the wheel. But when the bus arrived, Joy was nowhere to be found. Instead, a man was at the wheel, and he certainly didn't have the smile nor the welcome she had. George wondered what happened to her. He felt bad for being rude to her. After all, she was only trying to be nice, and it wasn't her fault my life is in the toilet, he thought. George sat quietly on the bus, no conversation, no smiling, and certainly no energy. He thought about yesterday's meeting with his boss and the meeting he had with his team. He knew some changes had to happen, and they had to happen quickly. He was ready to do something. What, he wasn't sure, but he knew he needed to do something to save his job, his family, and his marriage. He would start today, he thought. Chapter 6, The Rules. George arrived even earlier the next day at the bus stop. He sat on the bench and thought about work yesterday and how he wanted to make an impact and get things moving in the right direction. But as usual, one crisis had led to another, and he and his team had spent most of the day dealing with conflict and putting out fires rather than getting something done. George thought about each member of his team and how each one contributed to his growing problems. "I should fire every one of them." The thought made him smile. But then reality set in, and he knew that there was no way he could do that. If anything, he was the one who would be leaving the company before any of them. Besides, they weren't bad people. He had even hired a few of them. They had just lost their way somehow, he thought. Like a bad marriage, he figured, where you can't finger any one thing as the cause, yet you know it just isn't right. George was in such deep thought that he didn't hear bus number 11 pull up. When he looked up, he saw Joy once again at the wheel, and her smile made him smile. "Well, look a here. Look who we have here today. How you doing, sugar? I didn't think I'd see you again." "Me neither," answered George. "I was on the bus yesterday too, but you weren't here. Where were you?" he asked. "Tuesday's my day off, sugar. It's the day I take care of my sick father. He can't remember anything anymore. He doesn't remember his name, nor his pride and joy. Can you imagine not being able to remember me? Not easy to see your father every week and he has no idea who you are." "I'm sorry," said George, feeling bad that he hadn't thought she had a care in the world. "Everything is not always as it seems." "Don't be sorry, sugar. It's part of life. Every one of us has got challenges. Everyone who comes on this bus has problems. Some got marriage problems, health problems, family problems, work problems, and some got all kinds of problems. It's part of life, and I'm just another person on the bus who's got another problem. But you're so happy and cheery, said George. How do you stay so happy? It's just what I'm all about, sugar. It's because I love life. It's because I love you. And it's because I love me. How can I love myself if I don't love you? How can I love myself if I don't love everyone? You see, we're all connected, and I love it all. Even the ones who are hard to love. Like me, George thought. Yes, like you, George, he said, reading his mind. And how about you, she asked. What are you doing on my bus again? I thought we had seen the last of you after you ran off the bus faster than Carl Lewis at the 1984 Olympics. I consider myself blessed not once, but twice, with your presence. So please do tell. George told her about the flat tire, the repair shop, the brakes, and how he could have crashed if he had driven the car, and how he would have to take the bus for about 2 weeks. Well, that's just great, George. The fact that you're going to be riding on my bus is a great thing. As I said the other day, you're on my bus for a reason. I didn't know why exactly, but I do know now. George asked why, curiously, not quite catching on. What's so great about having your car in the shop for 2 weeks, he asked. Man, your head is hard to crack, but I'm going to be gentle with you. Look up there, George. To the right of the mirror. Tell me what you see. A sign, said George. That's right, a sign. And what does that sign say? It says the 10 rules for the ride of your life. Underneath the headline was a list of 10 rules that George really couldn't make out. He didn't have his reading glasses on, and the words were blurry. Besides, the sign's letters were handwritten and not very legible. That's right, sugar. All my long-term passengers learn these 10 rules. We talk about them often, and now I get to share them with you. I'm so excited, she cheered. Look at the big picture here, George. This ain't no coincidence. We got about 10 days on my bus together, and I got 10 rules for the ride of your life. George squirmed a little in his seat. I have enough rules in my life, he said. Wife rules, home rules, Little League rules. The last thing I want is more rules. Joy turned very serious for a moment. Her smile turned into a dead stare as she looked George right in the eye. You need these rules, George, she declared firmly. Never turn your back on something that will change your life forever. You got 10 days, and I got 10 rules that will change your life. Great things are coming your way if you're open, George. Be open. Please, be open. And at that, she smiled brightly once again and asked, Are you with me? In a calm, firm voice that made it clear she wasn't taking no for an answer. Yes, George answered, not believing he was actually agreeing to this. And all at once, the entire bus cheered, Yes, yes, yes. George looked around and for the first time realized that there were a group of other passengers on the bus as well. Don't be scared, Joy said. We always chant yes when a long-term passenger agrees to learn the 10 rules. It's our thing. It's what makes this the energy bus. We're all about positive energy here, and it's what makes this ride so great. You don't get more positive than the word yes, so are you ready to learn rule number one? We've got 5 minutes before we get to your stop, and this is a quick one. George nodded, still in a little shock. Everything was moving really fast, and a bunch of mixed feelings were swirling around inside him. On one hand, he wanted to jump out the window, while on the other hand, he was really curious to learn the 10 rules. After all, what did he have to lose? At this point, nothing, he thought. Chapter 7, You're the Driver. Rule number one is easy, Joy declared as she turned to a man sitting opposite George. He looked like a combination of a well-dressed accountant and a mad scientist who could easily pass for Einstein's offspring. Danny, please show George rule number one, she asked. Danny reached into his large file folder sitting on his lap and pulled out a piece of paper that said, Rule number one, you're the driver of your bus. Joy thanked Danny and shared how Danny had been made the keeper of the rules. A year ago, he was what I call a corporate zombie, Joy explained, walking around with no purpose and no life. You could have hit him over the head with a sledgehammer, and I don't think he would have noticed, she laughed. Now he's keeper of the rules and helping us move the bus forward, she said proudly. Taking a big swig from a large bottle of water that sat next to her seat, she turned her attention to George. Always remember that you're the driver of your bus. It's the most important of all the rules, because if you don't take responsibility for your life and control of your bus, then you can't take it where you want to go. If you're not the driver, then you'll always be at the whim of everyone else's travel plans. But what about the support of others, George asked. Of course you can seek directions and advice along the way, but remember, It's your bus and your trip. We're all driving on each other's bus, but each one of us has our own bus. The problem today, Joy continued, is that people feel like they have no say where their bus is going or how it's going to get there. Tell them that stat about when most people die, Marty. She directed as she looked in the rearview mirror at a young 20-something man sitting behind the back of the bus. He was dressed in polo and khakis and had a young face with blonde hair that sat on his head like a mop. As Marty pulled out his laptop and started keyboarding and clicking looking for the stat, Joy told George how Marty had come to be their research guy. How they would always get into interesting conversations about life, business, success, or whatever. And like clockwork, Marty would always come in the next day with some important research that shed some light on what they had discussed. They called him the Google Man because he could find the best information on any topic. "Here it is," he shouted as he lifted up his laptop for everyone to see the screen. The screen read, "More people die Monday morning at 9 a.m. than any other time." "Isn't that amazing?" Joy asked George, who did not quite understand the significance of this research and just stood silent. "Hello, George. I'm going to wake you up today like a shot of espresso," she chuckled. "Monday 9 a.m. is when most people start their work week," Joy said passionately. "Think about that, George. People would rather die than go to work," she said as the passengers on the bus chuckled. "It sounds funny, but actually, it's quite sad. People feel like they don't have a choice, so they give up. But I'm here to tell you today that you do have a choice. Right, folks?" she said, rallying the passengers on the bus. "You don't have to sit passively by like so many other unhappy souls who let life create them. You can take the wheel and choose to create your life. One thought, one belief, one action, one choice at a time. It's your bus, and you're the driver, and you choose where you're going and the kind of ride it's going to be. Don't you agree, sugar?" she asked. "I don't know," George answered. "To me, it feels like over time, everyone in your life, including life itself, makes more and more decisions for you. And before you know it, it's not even your life anymore. The government tells me what taxes I have to pay. My bosses tell me what to do at work. My wife orders me around at home. I feel imprisoned by a paycheck and responsibilities. So to answer your question, no, I really don't feel like I have a choice. The truth is that instead of living, I feel like I'm dying every day. Maybe I'll be one of those 9 a.m. Monday morning people," George said. "There's no maybe about it," Joy countered. "If you continue down this poor me road, you are well on your way to being a Monday 9 a.m. fatality. So what you got to do now, George, is take the wheel and change direction. You may not have felt like you had a choice in the past, but starting now, you will realize it's your greatest gift. And once you reclaim your power, everything, and I mean everything, will begin to change. No one can choose your attitude but you, George. No one else can choose your energy, George. In fact, smile for me right now, sugar." George didn't budge. "I'm not asking you, George. Now smile." So he did, knowing she was one woman he didn't want to see get mad. "See, George, you chose to smile, and just by doing that one thing, you changed your energy. A smile changes the way you feel, the way you think, and how you interact with others. The energy you fuel the ride of your life with is entirely up to you. And as the driver, you're the one who must choose your vision of where you want to go. You have the best seat and the best view of your life, so it's up to you. You gotta have vision. So let me ask you, do you know where you want to go, George?" George sat up straight, looking out the window, and noticed they were about a mile from his office building. He didn't have a clue where he wanted to go. He just knew he didn't want to be where he was anymore. Joy had known it before George even thought it. A man with a vision has a certain look in his eye, a walk in his step. He walks like he knows where he is going and why he is going there. And George didn't walk like that. "I know we're almost at your office," Joy said, "but I want you to read something before you get off. It's something that inspired me to call this the energy bus." She reached into her bag next to her seat and pulled out a children's book with a graphical picture of a bus on the cover with the words "energy bus" on it. "It's a children's book," George said, very frustrated, as he wondered why in the world she would want him to read a children's book right now. "I know. That's what I love about it. You see, life is simple. But in all our stuff, we make it complicated and become blinded to the simple truths. But it's the simplest lessons in life that are often the most profound and meaningful. So don't scoff at a children's book or the simple rules I share with you. Because one of the most important things you can ever realize is that the closer you get to truth, the simpler and more powerful the lessons become. Yes, the rules are simple, but as you will realize, they mean everything. So read, George, read. Feeling a little embarrassed, George started to read nonetheless, and at once he was transported in his own mind to his house reading his children the book. This is your energy bus. You are the driver. Did you know that you can take your bus anywhere you want to go? Say yes with me 3 times. Yes, yes, yes. You can take it to the movies, the beach, or the North Pole. Just say where you want to go and believe that it will be so. Because every journey and ride begins with a desire to go somewhere and do something. And if you have a desire, then you also have the power to make it happen. The bus stopped and Joy turned to George. So, where do you desire to go, George? What's your vision, she asked, as she handed him a piece of paper. Once you know this, all the other rules will fall into place. George sat at his desk looking at the piece of paper Joy had given him. At the top of the page were instructions from Joy. First decide what you want, George. Then you can start creating it. Don't let the world create you. You create your world. Complete these questions and we'll talk about them on the bus tomorrow. It had 3 sections on it, with a space for him to write, and it looked like this. 1. My vision for my life, including my health, is. 2. My vision for my work, career, job, and team is. 3. My vision for my relationship and my family is. Chapter 8. It's all about energy. When bus number 11 pulled up to George's bus stop the next morning, he watched a man run off the bus and then turn around and shout, "You're crazy, lady." "Oh yeah," Joy shouted back. "When you're ready to learn something on my bus, let me know." "What was that all about?" George asked as he took his usual seat. "He believes in the biggest illusion of our time," Joy answered. "Bigger than the illusion that the world is flat or that the sun moves east to west." "Illusion?" George paused. "What are you talking about?" "The illusion that we live in a physical world," she declared with the confidence of a college professor. "You see, George, the universe is made of energy. Einstein taught us that." Danny lifted up a piece of paper. "See, George, E equals MC squared," he said. Joy continued. "Einstein taught us that anything that is matter is energy. So all the physical stuff we see, and even our own bodies, are really made of energy. So this is an energetic universe we live in, and everything about us is energy. But you don't need to get deep and know anything about science to understand that life is all about energy," Joy said. "All you have to do is think about your own life. Think about the people who increase your energy, and those who drain you. Think about the foods you eat that make you feel great, and those that make you want to take a nap. Think about the projects at work that energize you and those that burn you out. Everything is energy. It is found in our thoughts, the words we say, the music we listen to, and the people who we surround ourselves with. Are you with me, George?" "I am," answered George, who was thinking that he couldn't remember the last time anything at work had energized him. "Watch professional football or basketball on television," she continued, "and you'll always hear the announcers talk about the energy of the team, the energy of a player, or the energy of the fans. Walk into any arena or stadium and you can feel the energy of the crowd. It's like there's electricity in the air. Coaches often talk about how the players are on the same wavelength or how this team is just out of sync. They'll also say things like, 'We're playing with a lot of energy tonight.' It's all about energy, George. Have you ever worked with a colleague and you both knew what each other was going to say next? Or you said the same thing at the same time?" "Of course," George answered. "Happens all the time." "Or has your wife ever read your mind?" "Too many times," he said with a smirk. "Energy of thought," she declared. "Our thoughts are powerful because they are loaded with energy. That's why I asked you to write down your vision for your life, work, and family," she said. "There is an energy to thought, and when you identify what you desire and write down your vision, you begin the process of mobilizing the energy of thought to create the life you want. After all, you can't go somewhere if you don't have a vision of where you want to go. It's like trying to build a house without a set of plans and a picture of what the house is going to look like. It's like me driving this bus with no clue where my destination is. So, George, please tell me you have a vision. Tell me where you want to go. I hope you wrote it down on the paper I gave you." Chapter 9. George shares his vision. George, in fact, did have a vision. Several of them. and he had written them down. He pulled out the paper from his briefcase and explained to Joy that at first it had been a little hard to do this because it had been so long since he had thought about what he wanted. I spend so much of my time living my life according to everyone's demands that it actually felt strange to think about what I want, he told her. But once I got started, it felt really good to think about what I wanted for my life. She nodded, reassuring him with her big eyes and smile. Go on. Go on, George. Do tell. He told her about his vision for his personal life, how he had been a star college athlete who played lacrosse, and now he wanted to get back into great shape and get rid of his big gut that hung over his belt. He explained how thinking about his vision made him remember a time in the past when he had been really happy and alive, and how he wanted to feel that way again. He told Joy about wanting to be a better father and a husband as well. I want my kids to look back 20 years from now and think of me as a happy, positive influence in their lives, he shared. That's not the case now, so I know something has to change. What about your wife, Joy asked. What is your vision there? I want my wife to stay married to me, he said. I have this vision of us laughing together like we used to, remembering why we fell in love in the first place. Oh, you are such a romantic, Joy said, teasing him. She knew he had a good heart. She had liked him the moment she had seen him get on her bus, and had known buried underneath all those dark clouds was a light that wanted to shine. She was thrilled to see that light coming through as he shared his vision with her. George, who was blushing now, however, didn't feel like a romantic at all. On the contrary, he was petrified of losing his marriage. So he explained to Joy his situation and his hope that things would turn around. They will improve, Joy assured him, but George didn't share her confidence. Just trust, she said calmly. Trust. Then she broached the subject of work and his vision for success at the NRG company. George shared with Joy how he and his product marketing team had a big launch coming up for his new light bulb called the NRG 2000. If it doesn't go well, I'm toast. My career is done. So my vision is to somehow get my team on the same page and work really hard together to create and deliver a successful launch. On a scale of 1 to 10, how ready would you say you are for this product launch? Joy asked. About 2, answered George. We're disorganized, unmotivated, and quite frankly, a sorry bunch. That's not good, dude, Marty shouted back from the back of the bus. No, it's not good at all, George answered, thinking he wished the dude in the back of the bus would just be quiet. Joy jumped into the conversation. No, it's not good, George, but that don't mean it can't be good. It's not like we haven't faced crises before on my bus. She looked at Marty. Remember your rehab, Marty? And when Danny had that heart attack, what turned it all around was your desire and vision to change and the focus to make it happen. Unfortunately, it takes a crisis for so many of us to change, she added. I don't know why, but it does. I wish more people wouldn't wait for everything to fall apart before they start thinking about their life and what they want. They don't have to wait, you know. But sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes we have to see what we don't want to know what we do want. As she was talking, George thought of his mother with cancer and how she had told him all the changes she wanted to make when she survived. Then he knew exactly what Joy was talking about. So yes, George, Joy continued, this is your crisis, but it is also your opportunity. Every crisis offers an opportunity to grow stronger and wiser, to reach deep within and discover a better you that will create a better outcome. So while this is your crisis, what matters most is what you do with it. Okay, so now you know where you want to go, and you have a desire and vision, you are ready for rule number 2. Chapter 10, Focus. Danny pulled out rule number 2 on a piece of paper, which said, Rule number 2, desire, vision, and focus. Move your bus in the right direction. Joy turned around, looked at George, and said, It's all about focus, George. Without focus, buildings don't get built, paintings don't get painted, and energy gets scattered. You told us what you want. You shared your vision. Now I want to help you turn that vision into reality, and it all starts with thoughts. How are my thoughts going to make my work and marriage better, George asked in a skeptical tone. The energy of thought, as we discussed, Joy answered confidently. Each day, I want you to focus on your vision for 10 minutes. And see yourself creating everything you wrote down on your paper. You see, Georgie, there is a law of energy. It's called the Law of Attraction, Marty shouted from the back of the bus. That's right, the Law of Attraction, Joy continued, and it says that the more we focus on something, the more we think about something, the more it shows up in our lives. For instance, I bet every time you buy a new car, you start seeing it everywhere in the road. George nodded, knowing it was true. Ever wonder why that is? Joy asked rhetorically. But before George could answer, Joy said, because thoughts are magnetic. What we think about, we attract. What we think about expands and grows. What we put our energy and attention on starts to show up more in our life. And the energy we project through our thoughts is the energy we receive. That's why so many people have had the experience of thinking of a friend or a relative, and then they call on the phone, Marty confirmed. The phenomenon actually has a scientific name. It's called telephone telepathy, he proudly shared, showing the research on his computer. Joy continued, there is an energy to thought. So it's important that you spend your time thinking about what you do want rather than what you don't want. You've got to focus. Do you know all those people, George, who all they do is complain? They focus on what they don't want, don't like, and don't have? Of course I do, George answered, thinking to himself that he was one of them. Well, I tell those people that when you complain, you get more things to complain about. So no more complaining and negativity, okay, George? I don't allow complaining on my bus, because if you're complaining, you can't be thinking about or creating what you do want. Plus, your complaining also ruins everyone else's ride. I have a saying that I used to say on my school bus to the kids, and now I even say it to my adult passengers as well, because they often need to hear it more than the kids. It goes like this, we're winners, not whiners. With that, the bus erupted in laughter, and everyone started chanting, we're winners, not whiners. So I want you to stop thinking about what you don't want and start focusing your energy on your vision and what you do want. Make sense, George? Joy asked. The more you see it, the more likely it will happen, Marty said from the back of the bus as he walked towards George to show him the research on visualization and Olympic athletes. All the Olympic athletes use it because there's so much research that shows it works, Marty said. Behind every gold medal are hours of visualizing their best performance or race. So why shouldn't dudes like you and I use it to create a phenomenal life and success? Marty knew this better than anyone else. He was one of those guys who never had any luck until Joy showed him to create his own luck by projecting lucky energy. He was a surfer who dabbled in the internet business, and he had just started a new company after selling his previous venture for several million dollars. Now, he only expects good fortune, and that's what he gets. We live in an energy field of dreams, Joy cheered. If you build it in your mind, focus on seeing it, and take action, the success will come. They were definitely making George think. His life was falling apart, and maybe it was because of his negativity, as his wife had told him so many times. He thought of himself at work and home, and saw himself complaining a lot. But would changing these thoughts right now really make such a difference, he wondered? Would focusing on his vision really help attract it? He was an athlete, and he had heard about athletes using visualization before. But that's sports, and this is life. A lot of negativity and problems had been accumulating for a long time, and it had taken him a while to reach this crisis. Field of dreams, right, he thought skeptically. Instead, I'm building a big pile of you-know-what. Could he really turn it around that easily? But on the other hand, he didn't have a good reason not to try it. At this point, he would try anything if it meant saving his job and marriage. With a big product launch next Friday for the NRG 2000, this was a time for dreams, because he had nothing else. Chapter 11, The Power of Positive Energy. Okay, I'm on the bus, George said. I've got my direction set, and my vision is good. But I have to tell you, it's not so easy to think about what you want and be positive when you don't have a lot of things to be positive about, and you keep getting what you don't want. You don't know the sharks I'm dealing with at work. You have no idea the challenges I'm facing right now. I'm hitting a lot of roadblocks. You're right, George, Joy answered. I don't know all you're facing. But I do know that if you want to change your situation, you must first change your thoughts. Because if you keep on thinking what you've been thinking, you'll keep on getting what you've been getting. I also know the special formula I want to share with you. Show him, Danny. Danny reached into his briefcase and pulled out a paper-sized sheet of cardboard. As George wondered how many signs he had in there, Danny lifted up the cardboard which said, E plus P equals O. The E stands for events in your life, Danny explained. The P stands for perception, and the O stands for outcome. We can't control the events in our life, but we can control how we perceive them, and our perception and response to the events determine our outcome. The P can also stand for positive energy, Joyce said, and this formula explains why positive energy is so important. Sure, you have your vision for what you want to create in your life, but there will always be people who don't share your vision. There will always be potholes and roadblocks that can block your journey on the road of life. Things happen like your flat tire, George, but it's how we choose to deal with the events in our life that means everything. We all get down, but the key is what we do to turn life around. Like I told you, choose wisely. Positive energy and positive people create positive results. There is certainly a lot of negativity in the world, and choosing positive energy helps us deal with the negative people and negative situations that can knock us off course. Positive energy helps keep the bus moving forward with momentum. And we're not talking about fake kind of chest-thumping, rah-rah positive energy that simply masks our negativity and annoys people. No, this is the real deal. We're talking about real positive energy that helps you overcome obstacles and challenges to create success. We're talking about trust, faith, enthusiasm, purpose, joy, and happiness. We're talking about the positive energy to inspire and lead others. We're talking about the positive energy that makes you feel great instead of the negative energy that drains you. This is real stuff, my man, and it's the key to life and rule number three. Show 'em, Danny. Rule number three, fuel your ride with positive energy. Think of it like this, George, Joy continued. Desire, vision, and focus help you turn the bus in the right direction. But positive energy is necessary to take you where you want to go. Every day when we look at the gas pump of life, we have a choice between positive energy and negative energy. Positive energy is high-octane fuel for the ride of your life, while negative energy causes sludge to accumulate in your energy pipeline. But what do I do with the negativity I have? Asked George. Joy pointed to the trash bucket. Right there, George. You let it go. You release it. You throw it out. You transform it. When the work is piled high on your desk, think about how thankful you are even to have a job while so many are unemployed. When work is driving you crazy, think about the fact that you are healthy enough to work. When you're sitting in traffic, be thankful you can drive a car while so many have to walk miles just to get clean water. When the restaurant messes up your meal, think about how many unfed mouths there are in the world. And as I told my father a number of years ago when he lost the love of his life, my mother, you had the kind of love for so many years that many people spend a lifetime searching for and never find. Let's be thankful for that. Joy added, where there is a negative, there is always a positive. Where there is a dark cloud, there is always a sun shining behind it. So you're saying that I need to keep fueling my life with positive energy if I want to be successful, George asked. I'm not saying it, Joy answered. I'm screaming it. I have found that where there is a void, negativity will fill it. So we must keep fueling up with positive energy so the negative energy doesn't have room to expand. We must fuel up daily with positive thoughts, cultivate positive feelings, and take positive actions. Positive energy is all of these things. Without it, your ride will stall. And what about my team at work, George asked. Same thing, Joy answered. We'll need to get them focused and positive too. You want them to understand and be part of your vision. You'll want to get them on the bus. I've got some rules for you that are going to make them big-time successes, but we're not ready for that yet. First, let's help you fuel up with positive energy, because you can't share the positive energy if you don't have it yourself. Once you get your bus rolling then, you'll be ready to ask your team to get on. 1 mile at a time, my man. One positive thought, feeling, and action at a time. We'll talk about your team soon. As the bus approached George's stop, Joy directed Marty to pull out what she called that energy book and read him the story about the positive dog. Marty picked up the book that was sitting next to him and started reading. A man goes to the village to visit the wise man, and he says to the wise man, I feel like there are two dogs inside me. One dog is this positive, loving, kind, and gentle dog. And then I have this angry, mean-spirited, and negative dog, and they fight all the time. I don't know which is going to win. The wise man thinks for a moment and says, I know which is going to win, the one you feed the most. So feed The Positive Dog. "Thank you, Marty," Joy said as she directed him to give George the book. "I can't," said George. "It's yours." "No, it's yours," said Marty. "We give them away all the time on the bus, so consider it a gift of energy. Instead of you swimming against the current of life, this book will help you ride some awesome energy waves." "That's right," said Joy. "This book is going to help you take action and feed the positive dog inside you so you cultivate the positive energy you need to succeed. It's pretty simple. Just do one of the 10-minute exercises in the book. Pick any one you want. Just do one today and feel your energy rise." "I will," George said. "I am ready to take action." As George walked off the bus and towards his building, Joy shouted, "Feed the positive dog, George! Feed the positive dog!" He looked back and pumped his fist in the air as he walked to work. But then he realized he was walking into a building where his future couldn't be more negative. Chapter 12, George Takes a Walk. As George sat at his desk, thumbing through the book Marty had given him, looking for a positive energy exercise that appealed to him, he thought of his old friend Chuck, who had made a fortune during the internet boom. He remembered how surprised he had been to hear that Chuck and his wife had divorced. He thought about appearances and how, on the outside, Chuck seemed to have everything. Money, family, big house, a plethora of companies that wanted Chuck to run them. Yet George realized everything isn't always what they seem. He found out that Chuck really had a lot of personal problems that spilled over and caused the destruction of everything else in his life. When George really thought about it, he never remembered Chuck being happy. Thinking of Chuck made him realize even more than ever that he didn't want to go down that road. Everyone else probably thought he had it all too. If they only knew, he thought, appearances weren't enough. The show wasn't doing it anymore. He wanted to feel good. And so a big smile came across his face when he came across the thank you walk in the energy book. One moment he was reading how it's physically impossible to be stressed and thankful at the same moment. And the next minute, he was walking around his building outside saying what he was grateful for. He knew if people from his company saw him talking to himself, they would think he was crazy, but he didn't mind. Sure, it felt a little funny, but the walk was energizing him. And counting his blessings really did make him feel great. The book said that being grateful floods the body and brain with positive emotions and endorphins, and combined with walking, is a powerful energy booster. It sure was right. As George walked back into his building, he felt more positive, energized, and ready to take on the day at work. Joy was right, he thought. Feeding the positive dog really does feel good. Now if I can just feed the lions at work, I'll be okay. He chuckled as he walked into his office to meet with his team about the new product launch. Chapter 13, One Great Golf Shot Theory. That night, while watching television, George acted on an inspired impulse to go grab his bag and pull out the energy book Marty had given him. As he looked through it, one section really caught his attention. It was about golf, a sport he loved to play but rarely had time for. The book talked about how after people play a round of golf, they usually don't think about all the bad shots they made, but rather always remember and focus on the one great golf shot they had that day. The thought and feeling they get when thinking about the shot makes them want to play again and again. This is why so many people get addicted to golf. The book then contrasted this with life and how people often go to bed thinking about all the things that went wrong when instead they should apply the one great golf shot theory to their life and think about the one great thing that happened that day. The one great call, meeting or sale. The one great conversation or interaction. The one great success that will inspire them to look forward to creating more success tomorrow. This, the book said, will inspire people to get addicted to life. Well, it worked because George was inspired. He had an idea, walked into his children's bedrooms, and asked each one to tell them their success of the day. He explained that it could be something great that happened to them that day, or something they were proud of. The children lit up and smiled as they recalled their successes, and George knew this would be their new nightly ritual. Then he took a walk around the block with his dog and thought about his own success that day. His boss had come up to him and said, "There's something different about you, George. Whatever you're doing, keep it up." It's amazing how positive energy works, George thought. Whether you have it or don't, people notice. Later on that night, as he lay his head on the pillow, George thought about sharing the one great golf shot theory with his team. Because if there was any group of people on the planet who needed to learn to focus more on the positive instead of the negative, it was they. Chapter 14, Bus Tickets. It was Friday.